From Capital Analytics, I'm Abby Maloney, and this is Invest Insights. Each week, we bring you perspectives, business advice, and more from the leading executives, entrepreneurs, and investors who are building, diversifying, and leading the way in the country's fastest growing metro areas. Real leaders, real insights, right now. Welcome to Invest Insights. On November 12, 2020, Capital Analytics, our parent company, hosted a leadership summit for the release of the annual investor's guide, Invest Palm Beach. During the event, panels discussed development, both in terms of real estate as well as economic recovery. In today's episode, we feature the panel, Innovation in Development, Finding Opportunity in Unprecedented Times. The moderator that day was Ramsey Buckley, the executive director for the Palm Beach County Department of Planning, Zoning, and Building. And panelists included Rick Gonzalez, the president of REG Architects, Mark Trowan, the senior vice president of the Brookwood Group, Brett Reese, the senior vice president of Crocker Partners, and Deona Hall, the chief executive officer of Broward Palm Beaches and the St. Lucie Realtors Association.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to be a part of this. And yes, times are quite interesting and different right now. So what I'll do is I'll go through and give a brief intro of who we have, and then they can then view of the things that they're dealing with right now. So first off, we have Rick Gonzalez. He's the president of REG Architects. Mark Trowan, senior VP of Brookport Group. Brett Reese, senior VP of Kroger Partners. And Deona Hall, the chief executive officer of Broward, Palm Beaches and St. Lucie County Realtors. So what I'll do right now is just have each one just do a brief intro. We'll start with Deona Hall and just give a brief intro, what some of the key points of your organization is, and then some of the things that you've noticed that have happened since this pandemic started and how you just briefly adapting to keep things moving.
Great. Thank you, Ramsey, and thank you. You know, we are the Broward Palm Beaches St. Lucie Realtors, and we have 37,000 members across about 125 miles of coastline. We run from the Treasure Coast down to the tip of Broward County. We also own the MLS here, which the members enter most of their real estate listings into. And we have about 80 staff and 8 offices here to assist our members with whatever needs that they might need. And the pandemic has been really interesting. It's been very good for real estate, as many of you have read. And we are here to make sure that our realtor members can easily pivot into the virtual transaction and meet all their needs, just like they would be conducting real estate if this pandemic didn't exist.
Okay, perfect. And then just a carry-on question, how is the foreclosures, I know that they have been suspended somewhat, how has that impacted your business with the realtors? Has it picked up or declined?
Well, our realtors that handle the rental market, that was a challenge for them to make sure that they were continuing to prosper in that marketplace. But since that has kind of summed up, everybody is continuing business as usual. We understand that we are huge advocates for home ownership and those that need a place to live. So it was definitely a double-edged sword with, you know, where we stood on that issue, because we do know that this is a very challenging time for everyone, and they had different sensitivities in the job market. So, you know, we support the actions that were taken. They were a little long, probably, for us to be able to kind of continue to move the market forward. But we do understand that these are families in these rentals, and it's very important to make sure that they're protected as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. Let's see. I will jump to Mark. So, Mark, your Brookwood Group focuses on high density and urban type living environments. How has this affected you? And the reason I ask you that, I actually live at the Brightline building downtown. So I'm fully familiar with, you know, how the attitudes have changed in the building just because everyone's a little bit more dense. How has that affected you?
Well, thank you for having me here and to everybody at Invest Palm Beach. Let me just mention that our firm actually works in markets across the country. We're effectively a virtual organization, and the pandemic has only accelerated that. Yes, we do high density and infill projects, and our focus has always been on those properties, which I think others shy away from. And to further answer your inquiry and question, it's really interesting that, yes, we've heard about the flight from the cities, we've heard about the challenges of density, but it's in fact the opposite. for those who are not afraid of that, and for those locations which can really benefit from infrastructure, such as the Brightline, which I was going to mention, we see the opportunities are still there. Location and demographics still rule, but it's just how we've changed it. And so I'm sure Rick will talk about this, but looking at our amenities, looking at the design of what we build has been important. And what's also interesting is that our projects, we're located, by the way, not only here in South Florida, but in Atlanta, San Francisco, Seattle, and Los Angeles, we've seen that this whole emphasis on trying to create affordable housing and mixed-use projects really, I think, is going to be much more compelling in light of what's gone on here with the pandemic. So as a virtual organization, this has in fact accelerated it. Just as Abby had mentioned, we started using Zoom and now our clients and our colleagues use it. So when we do our own developments, when we consult for others as well, and when we do projects, in fact, I'm working on a large land project in the middle of the country, in the Midwest, this has actually facilitated our ability to get our approvals and interact with local authorities. So this is a challenging time, but I think that the prognosis for developments like where you live and others, especially our work, really is really quite good.
Okay, all right, thanks very much. So since you mentioned Rick, I'll jump to Rick, if you wouldn't mind just giving a brief intro on you and some of the things that you've had to adapt with besides the train stations making extra noise and you having to get new windows. How have you gone about trying to design or redesign type some of the projects that you've done?
Yeah. Thank you, Ramsey. I do want to thank Abby and Invest. This is the second year we participated. Last year was fabulous, and I'm very pleased with the amount of people attending the conference and, of course, my fellow attendees over here. So it's been a very interesting year, right? It was our I moved to West Palm 35 years ago, and I started my business in 1988. So we've been celebrating this year. We actually relocated in the middle of the pandemic in April to a new space, which was a plus. It's much larger, much more open. The workstations are larger, 8 foot, 10 foot versus 6 feet. Conference room has a sitting area. So those are subtle ways of dealing with it. Of course, the way we receive our guests to the office now that we have people visiting, you know, and asking them to do certain things when they walk in. The same thing with our clients. I'll use an example. We're designing a new headquarter for Hewlett, the environmental group on Okeechobee Boulevard. Two-story building with 6 outdoor areas. So outdoor uses are becoming more important to people. I think, like Mark said, too, working and like you, you know, and myself, working and living in an urban environment, believe it or not, I think is an amenity, because instead of being in a car driving from one spot to another, you know, I live and work downtown 10 blocks away. I can either ride my bike or walk when the weather is fine, and I get some outdoor air. You know, I think a big part of the COVID has been the impact not only to our physical health, but our mental health, right? And so being able to walk, I have 20 employees, they can walk outside, they can walk to the marina, they can go to a cafe, you know, that's very, very helpful. In terms of other clients, we're picking up, as Diana said, a lot of people moving down here. It's a great silver lining opportunity. We have new clients from New York and Chicago and other places with new projects. I'm going to St. Augustine this afternoon, from St. Augustine all the way down to Lighthouse Point, you know, so on the private sector, very exciting. And then later on in this conference, we're going to hear from the public sector. And you know what? I'm very, very grateful for my public work. I remember years ago, I was just starting to work for the president, and a Palm Beach County official told me, don't forget about public work, you know? And here we are 30 years later, about 40% of my work is public work, and that's kept us, thank God, very busy this year. You know, and unlike 2007, you know, 2007 was really a financial meltdown, a sense of health that was not in the environment for many years. In fact, for until 2017, we really didn't see an improvement, you know. And this year we have a double whammy with the physical and the mental health, and keeping the finances in check. I think it's important to keep that in mind.
Well, thank you. Well, just to report from Palm Beach County, on a good note, as far as development goes, we're actually seeing probably a 22% increase in the amount of value that we actually have with our permits. We're in the two plus billion range. So we've been able to keep on going while this has hit us. So hopefully there'll be some more work for you too. Let me jump to you, Brett, if you wouldn't mind just doing a quick intro. And then secondly, tell us how the commercial market's faring with all of this. You know, downtown, like I said, you know, I see some new office buildings coming up, and then some are changing course. How is this affecting you?
Well, so I'll introduce myself. Brett Reese with Crocker Partners. We're a owner-operator and developer of commercial real estate throughout the Southeast. Our primary focus is Class A office buildings. We've got 11 million square feet under management. You know, as far as the kind of capital markets go, you know, it's obviously been slow. The beginning of the pandemic, you know, I think everyone was frozen in time, really trying to figure out what's going on. Fortunately, where I think office differs from maybe some of the other asset classes that have already seen some significant distress, such as hotels and retail, office does tend to lag. In our particular space in Class A, our tenants are typically of high credit quality, you know, institutional tenants. So, you know, as we've all seen, the stock market, you know, continue to, you know, to rise, and the availability of PPP, you know, it appears that corporations right now are in fairly good standing. And so as a result, you know, our rent collections have been perfect, great, you know, stellar, and we have not really seen a lot of distress. I think the other kind of key point here is that whenever these cycles typically turn, you end up in a situation where buyers and sellers are on totally different pages. The bid-ask spread, as we kind of refer to it, is so wide that it's almost impossible to transact. Buyers think that the property should be worth a lot less, and sellers think it should be worth a lot more. So, you know, it's really not until that starts to converge that we see, you know, transaction volume pick up again. I think fortunately for us here in Florida and South Florida, we believe we're going to be the beneficiary here coming out of this. We've certainly seen a pickup in momentum down here as a result of folks migrating down from the Northeast and looking for office space. Obviously, this is a theme that we've all been, you know, pointing at and looking for 10 years now, but I think it's really starting to materialize and accelerate as a result of COVID, as a result of, you know, taxes, of course, you know, in the Northeast. It's going to be interesting as, you know, these budget deficits continue to grow in New York and these Northeastern states. It's going to be very hard for their governments to keep pace. And my sense is that taxes are only going in one direction up there. And so, again, that's going to continue to mean, you know, further migration, in-migration here into the South. So we'll see.
All right. Thanks. So a follow-up question to you. Do you assist your clients when they're looking for this Class A office space? Obviously, they're more than likely coming down with families. Do you help steer them in the right direction to where they should be buying, where they should be looking at schools and those kinds of things?
Not as much. So our, you know, I guess our kind of clients, the way we're structured, we joint venture with institutional equity partners. So think insurance companies, pension funds, private equity funds. Our other kind of clients, which would be our tenants, they typically have a sense of, you know, where they're headed within a specific market. And then, you know, from there, we might help them, or our brokers, our leasing agents might help kind of educate them on schools, on neighborhoods and so forth. But by the time they get to us, they're typically, you know, really at the point of evaluating building or two within a specific market and already know that that's, you know, that's where they want to be.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Deonna, a couple of interesting things I've personally noticed with doing some of my travels. It seems like some of the smaller little towns have kind of been gobbled up by people wanting to get away, for lack of a better term. Have you seen that trend here in Palm Beach County, where people are wanting to come down here and purchase maybe bigger type houses, maybe more in the rural areas? So what's the trend that you've noticed?
I think there's been a lot of, you know, news about that everybody really wants more space during this time period, that they have that ability more than ever because they are not necessarily tied to the bricks and mortar office that they were once, you know, tied to. So we obviously have already been seeing an influx of the Northeast coming down to South Florida because of our low taxes and our nice climate. A lot of times people had to wait till they retired. Now that their offices are going virtual and may be considering going virtual for the long term, they are able to move to the places that they always had hoped to before they retire. And so I think we're seeing a huge benefit of people coming down into the South Florida market because of that. And then the suburbs, obviously here in Palm Beach County, we still have, you know, developable space, unlike Miami and Broward County. And so that just makes us that much more attractive for people who are seeking out to have more space from their neighbors. So I definitely see that there has been a huge influx into those marketplaces.
I see. And has that influx resulted in some increasing of sales prices? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think that really the increase in sales price is the lack of inventory in the marketplace. You know, homes are really kind of flying off the shelf, and they have been in Palm Beach County for a long time with when it comes to that mid-range of housing, as we call it, workforce housing here in Palm Beach County. But, you know, right now we're seeing everything really fly off the marketplace, even when it's your more luxury homes. And again, I think that is a testament probably to the fact that those homes have more space, but also the Northeasterners coming down, a lot of times they have more money to spend as well. So I think across all marketplaces, there is a lack of inventory for homes, and that is increasing the prices, because if you want one, you're, you know, up against many more buyers.
Thank you. Mark, a question for you. How is your decision-making and investment with your company? How's it changed? You know, we kind of went through a spike, things dropped. Now we're into another spike. Europe's shutting down. We got the president-elect. How are these things all factoring in with your group?
So this, it's a great question. And actually, I'll pivot off of what Brett had mentioned. There's no question that decision-making with capital sources has slowed down. But when it comes to our approach to investments, and we're actually doing a number of mixed-use projects and workforce, especially in the West, because of the pricing issue, we've found that actually what's now happened is that there's just a greater focus, as we mentioned before, on the actual delivery of that product. And so it doesn't change our overall investment strategy. It changes our timing, number one. It does change, as we mentioned, the amenity and the structure of it, number two. But the third element, which I think is interesting, is that we used to be, many of us, focused on a much higher end of the market. And we found that that vast middle part of the market is really where I think the opportunity is. Now, of course, we focus on the mixed use on the housing side versus perhaps the office that Brett and Crocker does. And so that delivery of product, because the pipeline is so constrained, just as Diana mentioned, really has just once again, accelerated the focus. So there's a shift. And it's not that the product type we deliver is that much different, but the timing and where we deliver it now, I think, is going to be the key. So investment strategies are essentially the same, but now when and how we do it is what's been transformed. And I think this is all part of an acceleration that would have occurred in the market over the next 4 or 5 years. And the pandemic has compelled us to focus on that now.
Thank you. So one thing I have noticed with this pandemic and with keeping things going is technology has kind of taken off on certain aspects. Obviously, we're doing everything virtually now, which some love it, some hate it. You know, you can do a conference while you're driving in your car, work from home, but then, you know, there's the baggage that comes along with that. And I'll just go through the list. I'll start with you, Diana. What kind of technological things have you found that have been maybe underutilized in the past that now are being utilized in your group?
Yeah. Well, we here own the MLS, which is the multiple listing service where most homes for sale go into this huge database that offers cooperation and compensation for all of our realtor members. And what we've really seen is obviously the push to make sure that our MLS is offering the products and the tools and services for a virtual transaction to be completed from the beginning to the end. And so we have already had a lot of these virtual products, you know, like the e-sign programs or the different CRM programs feeding into all the other needs that these specific brokerages want to have in order to have the best products possible. But a lot of times people were kind of holding back on educating themselves on those products and services and getting comfortable with those products. So what we're seeing is a mass amount of our members going through our training, which we're offering virtual now, but we're doing it live so people can actually ask questions and really kind of dig deep into this virtual technology. We also made sure that we had new fields in our MLS for us to be able to allow realtors to do virtual showings. So that was really important because those virtual showings need to be able to syndicate to those people such as realtor.com and Zillow and such. So all these back-end things to make this virtual world in real estate continue on, a lot of people, you know, wouldn't think of, but it all really kind of starts here at our home MLS where we actually compile the data and allow that data to be used in all these products and services that harness, you know, people to be able to see real estate. And, you know, we think that we have really pivoted quickly here in our marketplace. And that's one of the reasons why our members were able to really kind of harness this great real estate market here in 2020, despite the pandemic. It also really helped that we were named an essential service. And so these virtual tools allowed us to show government that we were deemed worthy of basically operating as essential service properly and carefully in this marketplace.
Thank you. Rick, how about you? What technological features have you found helpful with going through this pandemic and providing service to your customers?
Well, you know, most of our work is on computer after the sketching phase when we're designing our buildings and our projects. So having access, you know, to the internet through our servers and having our projects deliverable systems through Dropbox, for example, basically everything is done through that now, where we can send very large files to clients. They can look at those drawings, they can print them, mark them up, and send them back. The same thing with our engineers and our contractors. A pretty smooth way of operating, I think. It's actually improved the way that we operate. On the maybe not so positive side is the fact that, you know, I guess we used to work like 18, 20 hours a day before, and now we're 24 hours a day, right? Now you're kind of, right, Mark?
Yes, and definitely.
Just work all day, you know? I mean, this is my office right here. I'll show it to you, right? My phone, you know? So you take it with you all the time, you know? And so that's, you know, that's okay. I found it interesting. I've been to a couple of in-person meetings, Village of the Quest, that we have a new project there versus other cities, and also Palm Beach Gardens just Monday night, you know, versus other cities that they're all on Zoom, you know, everything's on Zoom, you know? So I, by nature, I'm a very social person, very butterfly-ish. So it's changed my whole life. You see my storefront behind my new office. I feel like I'm a goldfish in a bowl, right? I mean, I'm used to being outdoors and going to, you know, conferences and board meetings and things like that, and chamber meetings. And it's, so what ways can we communicate differently now, right? The Zoom, the Dropboxes, and finally, a real push on social media. For example, before this year, I never even, you know, knew what LinkedIn was. I really just had the account. And now this year, we try to do some serious marketing of our projects, you know, our new projects, and then how other projects have to form over time. And I see a lot of people doing that. And it's a great way, I think, for us to stay communicated in this virtual world while we wait and see, you know, what's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Could I follow up, Ramsey? This is really great what he's mentioned. So it used to be before the pandemic that I was on a plane practically every week or every other week for our projects across the country. So now, yes, we're Zooming, but it's really interesting. So the collaboration, the compelling need to perform and do better online has really gone up, and that's improved the level of our collaboration, so that now I've actually been on a plane about a half dozen times now in the last 2.5 months. Those meetings are very focused, very purpose-driven, and it's like closing the deal, if you will. Still, that face-to-face is really critical. But now, this use, especially with the public sector, like with you and others, so when we try to get the approvals and we get the buy-in, people really notice that it's time to figure out not only how to do it, but how to execute and perform. So I think this is actually improving our ability to deliver projects. I see Brent shaking his head, yes. And the key is public and private sector collaboration, I actually think, has improved. Even in markets where there are NIMBYs galore, not quite like here, we're in a better position here in South Florida. So the long-term prognosis, if we manage it well, I think is actually a benefit to our industry.
And I'll just add, we've had a benefit too here in the county. We do sometimes between 700 to 800 building inspections a day. And with all that contact, you can understand it was a big issue. And you got to understand too that we have to keep this massive machine going. So we actually have our inspectors on their iPhones through thumbprint IDs, et cetera, can go in and speak to a real-time senior inspector at the office, and they can direct them, show me the gauge of the wire, show me this, show me that. It's all recorded, it's all verified. So that's how I can have one person do multiple inspections and a lot more efficient. And then also if the inspection fails, you know, hey, you don't have to drive all the way back out there. It's just, it's right there. So you can fix it instantaneously. So that's where we've seen some good things happen. Also, all our applications are now online, whereas before they weren't. So when you submit all your permits, which I'm sure your architects are going to like, it makes it way easier to submit online. So I see we've only got a few minutes left. So let me get to Brett here and see how this virtual world has changed things. Because, you know, I'm fairly certain when people are coming with these big contracts and lease agreements, they want to feel it and touch it because they stuck with it for multiple years. How has that impacted you guys? And do you still need that face-to-face touch and feel when you're trying to get your deals done?
Yeah, short answer, yes, we need it. We're in the bricks and mortar business, not technology, right? So we might provide a place for people to use their technology, but that can't be the replacement. So what we've really focused on here is, I think, are two things. One are allowing our tenants to get back to the office and feel comfortable and safe. We have 30,000 tenants, believe it or not, that go through our buildings on a typical day, not during COVID. So, you know, we viewed that as our responsibility to make sure that, you know, we prioritize their families and health and wellness above all else. So One of the things, or a few of the things we've done since this occurred, we immediately hired an infectious disease specialist, kind of our own version of Dr. Fauci, I guess. His job is to, we've created a task force along with our head of construction, property managers, engineers, and so forth. We've had all of our people on site trained through Johns Hopkins in contract tracing. Obviously, you know, the more standard stuff like making masks mandatory, implementing touch-free technology wherever it's possible. We really, you know, made it a point to take it head on. So that was kind of how we worked towards getting people into the office. Now, the next phase of this is, what does Office 2.0 look like? And I think a lot of us are still trying to get our arms around that. You know, I could tell you today we're running about 35% occupancy in our buildings, and we are certainly fielding calls and working through, you know, new leases. You know, I think what we've done, at least on our end, we've fused partnerships with architectural firms. In this case, we're working along with Gensler and kind of thinking through, you know, how we envision Office 2.0. You know, I think one of the kind of funny things here is you think back to the last cycle. As we hit the recession, you know, we saw companies start to contract and contract. And, you know, the reason, and people refer to this as right sizing, and really all they were doing is kind of cutting cost and stacking more and more people in a space and bullpens and to be as efficient as possible. My sense is that we're probably going to go, the pendulum's going to swing back again to where we were pre-recession, which was, you know, providing people with more office space, more, mm-hmm. you know, spread out their individual offices. We think through things like, I'll give you an example, conference rooms. In many office suites right now, to get to the conference room, you have to walk through the entire suite. Well, in kind of a post-COVID world, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to expose your entire office to your one or two guests that are coming into your conference room. So we're now, you know, designing a conference room at the front of a suite by the reception area. This list goes on and on. We've got snack areas so people don't have to congregate in kitchens. They can just grab a bottle of water without having to walk through the office. I think those are the types of elements that we're going to see kind of make their way into design here as we go forward. But for us, and it's kind of along this vein, you know, I just don't see this becoming a virtual world. You know, I think for many, I don't see a good path to becoming a CEO or a partner of a firm by sitting home on a Zoom. Your kind of earlier question, Zoom is great, but it doesn't replace a handshake. And I can tell you, we still have partners. They're flying now, they're coming down, and we're doing it with lots of Purell and mask on and social distancing and everything else, because that's how it has to get done. It's just how humans have interacted for thousands of years. And it's going to be, I think, the way we continue to act for thousands of years. So, you know, obviously there are exceptions to the rules. I think some of the folks on this call who are in maybe more of a consulting capacity where, you know, where that doesn't necessarily matter. But otherwise, I just don't see it as a replacement.
You've been listening to Invest Insights. Be sure to follow, rate, and review this podcast to hear more. I'm Abby Maloney. Thank you for tuning in.